Among the more comforting words in the New Testament, set to music by George Frideric Handel and a part of his oratorio, The Messiah, often remembered in a lyric soprano voice, but maybe best understood or heard in our minds as a quiet voice in the middle of a sleepless night. From Matthew's Gospel, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give thee rest," a promise. The neighborhood around Asbury United Methodist Church in Lubbock has changed dramatically in the last 5 to 10 years or so. It sits just south of Lubbock High School, a couple of blocks, and in the South Overton area. And when the McDougall Corporation renovated and gentrified the area east of the campus and north of 19th Street, the people that lived there, many of them, moved across 19th, and the neighborhood around this church has become much less stable, much more transient, and just life in general has become more difficult. The ministry of this church has had to adapt. The prior constituency were mainly people whose lives were near an end, and many had died, and people from the neighborhood were beginning to need what the church had, and the church had to change what it offered. So instead of closing, they made some changes. They hired a minister and a mission developer who speaks the Spanish language as a native and brought a new style of praise and worship that's now beginning to take hold and has become successful. Part of what they needed to do that was to completely redesign and refurnish their interior sanctuary. And part of what they needed to do that was to get rid of their organ, which they did. And just down the street, we have a new-to-us, wonderful Rogers organ that was of no longer use in that context, given the changing nature and needs of that ministry. Well, having made room for a new worship space, they renovated the front, and they dedicated that project this past week in a worship service that was vibrant and amazing and wonderful. And for that constituency and in that place, that change needed to be. And in order to make that change, they needed to move and make room for a new thing. Which got me thinking. Sometimes what robs us of our joy in life and our appreciation for each other are things that are simply in the way that need to be moved so that we can appreciate what God has done for us and what we are thus able to do for each other. So I began to wonder, what is it that we need to move out and make room in our lives for the indwelling of a comforting, loving God? Sort of a three-headed monster of troublesome emotions: arrogance, insecurity, and guilt. Right in front of us, most of the time, to some degree. I've often said that one of the worst things I can do for my own head is read the resumes of other scholars, because their publication list is always a little bit longer. The places where they've published their work, those journals are always a little bit better. They've written a couple of books besides, and apparently, where they work, to read their resume, walk on water. I wade through the waves and get my feet stuck in the sand as often as not. I was exercising around my lake the other day, and I do this regularly, and I timed it not long ago. I can run 3 laps about 3 minutes faster than I can walk them, which is to say my running pace is not very fast, but it does my heart some good, and it gives me a chance to think things through. Well, I was doing that the other day, and I passed a woman up in years who I've seen from time to time. I mean, there are regulars around the lake and so on. As I passed her, she said, "You're running too fast." I'd never heard that before. And I was actually just running faster than she was. And in that time frame, it also happened that somebody else coming from the other direction just zipped by me about twice as fast as what I was running. So the next time I caught up to this woman, who I believe is rehabbing a hip, which is pretty amazing, really, that she's walking to that degree, to that level at all, I said, you know, there's always somebody faster than you. And you're always faster than somebody else. Which is true for walking and running. It's true for publishing articles. It's true for teaching expertise. It's true for whatever it is that we're called to be about at this particular moment. And it's not a comparison in life. Much as especially guys would think otherwise, we are always comparing and judging and evaluating. And yet, the only thing that matters is what you are doing at this moment in time. And so, the temptation to cover up insecurity with arrogance gets in the way of our understanding of and respecting what it is we are about. I had a gifted colleague who died a few years back, and when I came up for tenure 10 or 12 years ago, he and I had published an article together, and the reviewer of my tenure case noted in that article what he thought were some insufficiencies and inaccuracies in the way we did our statistical methods. Well, the partnership, of course, was with my friend, the statistician, who took serious umbrage at the criticism and spent the next 2 days searching the archives of sociological literature, finding everything this reviewer had written and pulling it apart. What a waste of time, because his work in and of itself and our work together was good enough for what we are about at this time and place. Is it good? It's good enough for you at this time and at this place. Dial back, set aside, move out the twin dynamic of egomaniacal obsession and insecurity that my dear friend spent 2 days wasting his time flipping back and forth. But that whole dynamic isn't as bad as the one that is beneath it, and that is the assumption that at the end of the day and in our heart of hearts, we just aren't good enough. We could always do better. We replay what occurred any day we choose, probably. And if we wish, we can feast on where we screwed up, because we always do. I think the most destructive thing we can tell ourselves, even more destructive than reading other people's resumes, is you could have done better, because you couldn't. If you could have, you would have. I had a student tell me one time, I wouldn't have gotten a D on that test if I wasn't so hungover. I could have done better. I said, well, you know, for a hangover, passing's not bad. In other words, given the circumstances under which this occurred, you did your best. Now, you also can learn from that and recognize that the behavior that produced the hangover is probably not the best idea the night before the next exam. Doesn't make you any different than any other human being that from time to time misjudges what happens or what should happen. But there's a difference between being consumed by guilt and then moved to inaction, paralyzed in some sense, as opposed to recognizing that you can take responsibility for your own behavior and maybe make it better the next time. Maybe. But in any case, it's really up to you and on you. So guilt can be replaced by genuine responsibility. We've got to move that aside to make room for what God intends us to experience in the company of others. At the very end of this worship service the other night, they had what looked very much like an altar call, but was a little bit different. It was not a time to come forward and be saved, although a lot of people, I think, felt that way and had experienced it in other traditions, but simply to come forward and kneel at the foot of the altar and pray and be prayed for. Bring your special concerns and needs forward. And there's this little 9-year-old that we've known for some years because we do a little volunteer work at this church. We've known her for 4 or 5 years. And I bet she comes up to get saved or be prayed for every single time she's at church, you know. And she made her way up to the front and moved next to a woman who's got her own struggles with life. We know her a little bit too. And these two souls simply wrapped each other up together, you know. And I was thinking, that's what happened here. Room was made at the altar. Room was made in the chancel for these two to find comfort and peace one with another, you know. And it reminded me a little bit of the old blessing, may the road rise to meet you, may the wind be at your back. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the hollow of his hand. May God hold you in the hollow of his hand. This child and this woman held each other and were held in their own way in the hollow of God's hand. And think about the hollow of God's hand for a minute, where there has been space made when nails pierced it. Space made for all of the things that we have done, left undone, failed to do, couldn't manage to fix. And yet we move forward. Because space has been made for us, we can perhaps make space in our own lives by setting aside the arrogance and the guilt and the insecurity, such that we can hear again what Jesus intends for us to hear every single day, even in the middle of the night. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, because room has been made, and he will give you rest. Amen.